Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today my guest is Dan Millman, and we're going to be talking about, well, the bridge between two worlds, experiences that people have had. Some might consider them serendipitous, others might say, coincidence, others might say they're paranormal. Regardless, they're fascinating, they're interesting, just as the man Dan Millman is. He and Doug Childers put this book together. And Dan, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna. I'm going to give you two gentle corrections. First, the title of the book is Bridge Between Worlds. Not two worlds, just worlds. And my co-author is Doug Childers. It's a tough name to pronounce, though.
Okay. It's spelled like Childers, and it is Childers. So thank you for those corrections. I appreciate that.
You bet.
Now, Dan, you have written a book that has been very, very popular. It's called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And it talks about your own personal experiences. And for those that may be listening in my audience that are not familiar with that publication, give us a little bit of your own personal story, because your life was turned around due to an unexpected accident. What happened?
Yes, actually, both Doug and I have stories included in Bridge Between Worlds, and mine is called Hidden Blessings, When Bad Luck Becomes Good Fortune. And I describe something that is in my first book, Way of the Peaceful Warrior, also in the movie based on the book with Nick Nolte, in which I had a serious motorcycle crash. Well, there have been worse ones, I suppose, but my right leg was shattered in about 40 pieces, and I was a young gymnast about to go to the World Championships, so it did dislocate my life, if not my leg. And that incident, which I write about in the particular story in the book, actually changed my life, because even though it was painful, disappointing, and all the usual things you might expect, it also shook me up, and I'm pointing up right now. I started asking bigger questions about life. It matured me very quickly out of my 20-something bulletproof phase, as many young people can be, and I realized the ephemeral nature of life, and that changed. It was kind of a mid-course correction in my life. I don't recommend fractures as a method of personal and spiritual growth, however.
Good point. I like that one.
Okay. But it was a central incident in my life. I wish we could learn things by sitting back, watching a favorite video, and eating Haagen-Dazs. That would be a wonderful school of spirituality. But for the most part, I find that challenges we face in life, things that demand of us to rise to the occasion, those tend to be the biggest learning experiences. Probably many people would relate to that. We've all had physical, emotional, mental pain in our lives at one time or the other, and we're probably stronger, wiser, and maybe even have a broader perspective because of those incidents, though we might not have welcomed them at the time. So Bridge Between Worlds has many different kinds of stories, a tremendous variety. In fact, if I can indulge myself just for a moment, I have one sentence, short paragraph, that really summarizes the book. It's from the preface of Bridge Between Worlds. It's, taken together, these stories remind us that we live in a more mysterious and perhaps more perfect universe than we usually notice, that unexplored territory remains hidden behind the seemingly mundane surface of our daily lives and in the depths of our own psyches, and that undreamed of possibilities may wait for us on the other side of the Bridge Between Worlds. So that summarizes the theme, and my story is but one of many.
One of the individuals that you bring forth in your book, and I have been at the Monroe Institute, is Robert Monroe.
Yes.
Let's talk about him a little bit. This man was extremely unique. He was not, in any sense of the word, what you'd call practical in the affairs of business, But yet his whole life became dedicated to exploring alternate realities. Let's go into his story a little bit, and why did you choose him?
Well, it's interesting. He was actually, let me just give a background that I'd love to get into Robert Monroe. It's a fascinating story. I've written 14 books over the last 30 years, and I was about to start a new project when my friend, a very gifted writer and editor friend who lives nearby, said, "Hey, can I come over? I have something to tell you about." I said, "Sure, Doug." And Doug Childers came over to the house and said, "Look, I have an idea for a book, and we could collaborate on it." And I said, "Well, Doug, I'm really doing pretty well on my own here." And he said, "Well, hear me out." And he told me this concept for a book, and I found myself fascinated. I said, "You know, each of my books is so different from the others. I don't like to repeat myself. I like to explore new territory." And I hadn't really addressed this question of miracles and mystery in our lives, phenomenon. Most of my books are very practical approaches to spirituality and everyday life, living in the present, facing our fears, and so on. Living with a peaceful heart, but a warrior spirit. And so Doug's proposal about doing a book like Bridge Between Worlds, with various stories, he said, "I've already researched and written about 15 stories. I know there are many more out there." So he brought many stories. I edited them and helped him write those, and he edited me. And I did find the Robert Monroe story. I read his book, Journeys Out of the Body, some years ago when he was still alive. And what fascinated me was, as you noted, he was, you know, a businessman. He wasn't a mystic. And yet some circumstances happened to him that he couldn't explain. His wife and children were in church, and he lay down on the living room couch to take a nap. And what he reported was, he said, "I just become prone when a beam or ray seemed to come out of the sky to the north at about a 30-degree angle from the horizon. It was like being struck by a warm light, and the effect when the beam struck my entire body was to cause it to shake violently, to vibrate. I was utterly powerless to move of my own volition. It was as if I was held in a vice." Now, can you imagine that happening to somebody out of the blue who just wasn't into this sort of thing? And he goes on to go into detail what happened, but eventually he noticed his arm fell off the couch, then he realized it hadn't. And he rolled off the couch, yet his body was still lying there. And he began to explore this consciousness moving around as if he had a body, but it was lying on the couch. And in later journeys, he was kind of shook up by this. He went back into his body, so to speak. But later he started exploring, and he found himself in a service station downtown. And he took careful notes. He was very skeptical because he said, "Well, this, you know, could be just a flight of the imagination, of course." And when he got home, he took careful notes when he got, you know, back in his normal state of consciousness. Then he went down to the gas station. Was the same car, same description, the people who were there. He said, a few minutes ago, was this person here talking with you? They said, yes. He confirmed for himself, somehow, he had gone non-locally. He was down there, even though his body was lying on the couch, immobile. And so I found this as fascinating as anything written by Carlos Castaneda and some of those old books, because he was in a normal state of consciousness, but this changed his life. See, what all these stories have in common, very different kinds of stories, Buckminster Fuller, and a very touching story of what happened with him and his daughter and his wife and his family. We've heard of Buckminster Fuller, inventor of the geodesic dome, or Emanuel Swedenborg. There was a church formed around this amazing, brilliant scientist who became a mystic. And the story of Edgar Cayce, many of us have heard about, and people who are unknown, virtual unknowns, who had life-changing experiences. So all of them had that in common with Robert Monroe, that his life turned around, his whole perspective on reality. And it's not just a matter of, oh, look what happened with these people. The reason we wrote the book is to remind people that there is this bridge between the conventional and the transcendental realm, these two worlds, and that bridge is waiting for us in times of need to give us that broader perspective. So not all of us may have experiences as dramatic or quote-unquote spiritual as somebody like Robert Monroe. My experience was a shattered right leg. It wasn't, but it did change my life, and that's what all the stories have in common.
There is a story that I found very touching called A Soldier's Healing, and this is about Sean and you can correct me on the pronunciation of his last name, Kilcoyne.
Kilcoyne, you got it.
And he was born in Massachusetts, but his story was quite significant because I've known a number of veterans throughout the years, and as a counselor have interacted with a number of different people involved in different levels of military operations, etc. And his was especially poignant to me. Share his story, because Sean's story is one that his experience when he was in the depths of ugliness really made a difference in his life and has affected the lives of thousands of other people.
Yes, it's been some time since I actually read Sean's story, so I'm happy for the opportunity to revisit it. That was a story Doug had found, and I helped edit, so I'm not as familiar. I'd almost love it if you would say something about what touched
you. I would be happy to. When you go back in history and you go back to Vietnam, Vietnam was a war, as all of us know, that the American people were not in favor of, and it was ugly. It was horribly, horribly ugly. On all levels, as any war is, but it was a war that was fought in a different way from the past, and I don't know that anyone's better or less or anything else than the other. They're all ugly. But he was in Da Nang near Monkey Mountain, and he was a part of an ammunition convoy. And when he was on this convoy, he was just seeing all kinds of things. He was seeing the attitudes of soldiers towards the civilians. One woman was struck by a soldier for no reason, her arm broken. And he was just overwhelmed by the lack of humanity that he was seeing. And here he is, a soldier. He's right there. This is war. And in war, there really aren't any rules. And he's going through all of this, and he said the war was measured to be successful by body counts. And the enemy was a guerrilla army, and it was just horrific. American soldiers were known for being very much involved with drug abuse. And Sean and his friends, they did whatever they could do to keep themselves sane. They were taking drugs, drinking heavily. And his service culminated during the Tet Offensive. And he came home. He had a serious drug and alcohol habit. And his life was just going downhill. Just a mess.
Yeah. That's, what's significant about this story, and the reason we included it, because his life reflects many, many Vietnam veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Not only, Jimmy Carter once said, "War is sometimes a necessary evil, but it's always evil."
Mm-hmm.
And I think President Obama would agree with that. He knows it's a necessary evil at times. In an ideal world, it's not. We would turn our swords into plowshares, and that's what I would like to see happen. Being a peaceful warrior, but. So that was one significant thing. This war, and we all know the history of it. But the other thing is, he has so much in common with the self-medicated people who were spit upon. These soldiers came back from Vietnam after risking their lives in a war they didn't understand, but they were trying to do their duty, drafted into a war that made really no sense. And he said in 1976, he flew to Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. The summer of love was long past, and Haight was now a paranoid pharmaceutical asylum. And he recalled, he said, "I drank and did drugs and hung out in strange bars with guys who locked themselves in their rooms, ate only cabbage, and worried about the FBI slipping microphones under their doors," and so on. And one day, as he was walking the streets of San Francisco in a state of despair, he stopped at a curb. Now, what could be more ordinary? He stopped at the curb for a red light on the corner of 9th and Market Streets. Both the light and his life were about to change. He said he looked up and he saw a young angel, 6 inches tall in white trousers, hovering in the air. Now, who would describe an angel like that ordinarily? It was hovering in the air about a foot from his right temple. He was bare-chested. The angel was bare-chested. It was a he. He had white wings glowing out of his back and held a sledgehammer in his hands, which he pounded silently on an anvil. When I saw, then I saw an identical angel off my left temple, also silently pounding a hammer on an anvil. In a flash, I felt a shock of awe as I saw my own darkness and fully opened to the wound at my center. I experienced the depth of desperation and savage anxiety that had driven me for years. He said, in that moment, I knew I wasn't alone, that my life wasn't going to end this way. And then an incredible light filled him and so on. Now, I know people go, well, yeah, he had an angel, you know, maybe he was on drugs, he had a vision. But it's as we say in the introduction to the book or the preface, it's not the experiences themselves that are the important part. The significance is these visions changed their entire life, their actions, their behaviors, their view of life. And it was a saving grace. Now, I wish that those angels had appeared to every Vietnam vet, and we know they didn't. And why some people are healed and others aren't, we cannot fathom. But that's what happened to Sean. And Richard Sabinski, there's a story called From Skinhead to Godhead. Sabinski was a terrible, hateful racist. Just got completely lost himself when he saw anybody of color. And he had another kind of vision. But these stories, of course, have their downside. But when you get into the life of Emanuel Swedenborg, amazing, amazing thing, or Peace Pilgrim. We even have the story of Byron Katie. Many people are familiar with Katie. I think she's one of the living illumined teachers today. And Katie, it was a resurrection of a madwoman. I mean, that's the story of what happened to her. Ashoka, the Kingdom of Compassion, how a soldier in India became he was a warrior and killed many, many thousands of people through his armies and became a Buddha. So it goes on, the variety of stories. One of the most outrageous stories in Bridge Between Worlds is St. Joseph of Cupertino. He's known as the Flying Friar. Now, if somebody starts to talk to me, Sue, you know, about, Don, I'm sorry, if somebody starts to talk to me about somebody levitating, I'm pretty skeptical. I go, well, yeah, we read about that in a lot of holy books, but have you ever seen it? You know, I'm kind of a skeptic. And this guy, though, Joseph of Cupertino, was witnessed not only by the Pope, but by royalty, numerous royalty of the time. People came to see him. The church finally, after about several years of these levitations, he'd go into raptures, and he'd kind of float off. Once he got stuck up in a tree, he woke up in a tree, way up on the upper branches, and he couldn't get down. They had to put a ladder there. So even though it's an outrageous story, there are 1,000 pages of documentation, of witnesses, reliable, detailed, multiple people describing exactly what they saw, him floating across the room, outside. So I think we've conveyed some of the variety of the kinds of people and stories in Bridge Between Worlds.
And what I like is that the variety, the diversity, I'll use that word. I think that's a better word to use.
I do too.
The diversity of story, when you think about mind over matter, and you talk about the young man by the name of Joseph, who was born in Poland, and is so sickly. When I read this story, I thought, my goodness, it sounds so much like the story of Jack LaLanne. But here is a young boy who found a mentor, Volanco, and Volanco taught him that he must assume no limitations, and every day he must stretch beyond what he believed he could do. And he ended up becoming, Joseph Greenstein, a phenomenal Superman. In fact, he was called the Mighty Atom. And this is something that when somebody would read this story, you would get like the old stories of Superman or someone that's become bigger than life. But actually, it was because of the effort that he put into it and his own strength and his own development through his determination. And he was a short guy.
Oh, he was about 5'4", and he was not bulked up like bodybuilders today, but he was probably the strongest man in modern times. Now, what I contributed this story to the book. Ed Spielman is the author of a book called, I guess the latest title of the book. It used to be called The Mighty Atom, but then they changed it to, someone can Google it if they're interested. I think it's called The Spiritual Journey of Joseph Greenstein. But he was born in 1893 in the poorest section of Suwalk, Poland. His wife fell while carrying water home. She went into labor and gave birth to a 3.5-pound boy, 3 months premature. In those times, premature infants rarely survived, especially among the poor, and this was midwinter.
Mm-hmm.
So when this tiny child survived the first week, nursed with an eyedropper, sleeping in a cotton-lined bed the size of a shoebox, word spread. 6 years passed. He was a frail boy, a very sickly boy. And yes, it tells how he was going by a circus and found Champion Volanco, his name was. He was a strong man, and he saved Joseph. He was getting beaten by some other kids. And he took him under his wing and began to, they were doing things like standing in the snow, rubbing snow on their bodies in midwinter. And Volanco really taught him about mind over matter. So, you know, I know Jacqueline. I've worked out with Jack at the beach, down at Santa Monica Beach years ago, because I was a gymnast and Jack used to come there and we'd do hand, mm-hmm. hand push-ups and so on. Believe me, this is a whole other realm. I mean, there's a newspaper article, and this was all reported in detail. There was a suitor jealous of Joseph because he coveted Joseph's wife, Chaya, who he was married for something like 50 years. They had 17 children. He was a faithful man, even though women were throwing themselves at him all the time. And this man was jealous and went after with a pistol and fired at point blank range, hitting Joseph between the eyes. She fired one bullet, it hit him between the eyes, and he walked into a pharmacy across the street and said, "I have such a headache." And they peeled the bullet, which had flattened on his forehead, off his forehead. He did feats that we wouldn't really think. He bit through case-hardened railroad spikes after preparing his jaws and teeth. And he was called the Mighty Atom, was his professional name. But and this is a man whose life has changed from a sickly youth through, as you say, his will, his training. He went to the East and trained with probably in some of the martial arts when he was younger. He went into a hall of Nazi sympathizers during World War II. Armed with a baseball bat, and he was surrounded by 100 people who hated him. And he cleared the hall single-handedly. So, again, there's many stories about his life. But he was also a man of great heart, a wonderful husband and father. Doctors have no explanation how he survived that shot between the eyes. But again, it's an amazing story. People could read about it. You know, we mm-hmm. refer people to. And Ed Spielman, by the way, was the creator of that old TV series, Kung Fu. Do you remember that?
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And Ed was a friend of Joe. He was a personal friend. Joe grew up around Coney Island area where he performed as the Mighty Atom. He was an old man. He was in his 80s by the time Ed had met him.
Mm-hmm.
But then he gathered, as a journalist might, he got his story in detail, saw all the newspaper clippings, and wrote the book about him, and we took the story from that book, and it's one
amazing.
Of again those diversity, as you say, of stories.
Well, there are so many wonderful stories in here, Dan, and you bring out the names of some famous people. You have the story about Walt Whitman. You also go into Carl Jung. Let's talk about Walt Whitman. This man is known for his beautiful, beautiful poetry. And it has such a richness and depth to it. Give us his story, because it's such a significant one.
Absolutely. And in fact, let me just share the start of this, because often we have this sort of the rest of the story kind of feel, just like Bucky
mm-hmm.
Fuller's story, which I just really touched me deeply. Many people have heard of Walt Whitman, as you say. He wrote Leaves of Grass, one of the famous epic poems. But you know, he was raised in a farmhouse built by his father's hand. It was populated by pigs, chickens, apple orchards, and herd of sheep nearby. And he worked in the newspaper trade. And he had a natural authority. He was a large man, and self-confidence and explosive temper. He was in a lot of brawls in bars. He had making friends, and he had plenty of enemies, too. He slandered, maligned, and baited his enemies, trumpeted his opinions from the public soapbox. Although journalism had much to recommend it, Walt aspired to succeed at poetry and fiction. But the fruits of his first 15 years of creative writing were mediocre and deservedly forgotten. Body of work consisted largely of bombastic, third-rate poetry, syrupy short stories, clumsy romantic morality tales and hack adventure novels, the overripe harvest of a profoundly unoriginal, uninspired mind. Biographer Kaplan described them as full of shabby melodrama, false sentiment, gothic dodges, derivative and imitative, preachy and didactic, dripping with false sentiment, cliché, and melodramatic contrivance. So no one, and by the way, this was universally agreed upon by scholars of the time, no one would have predicted the genius and originality that would burst forth out of nowhere, suddenly in full bloom at the age of 35 in Whitman's epic Leaves of Grass, after an almost five-year literary absence. So that was his turning point. And no one has ever explained what happened to him from that literary background. It should give hope to anybody who is an aspiring author today.
Absolutely. Well, here we've shared so many tidbits of what's in the book, Dan. How has this book changed you and your perception of things? You and Doug have pulled together such an eclectic arrangement. How has it affected the two of you?
Well, I can't speak for Doug. I mean, Doug has always had an interest in such phenomenon. I guess today it's safer being a little skeptical because there's so many true believers who will believe almost anything and don't have a real sense of discernment of reality and just stories they hear. So it's safer being a skeptic, and in a sense, I went through different phases in my own life and spiritual training, from highly metaphysical interpretations of reality to back to daily life. You know, head in the clouds but feet on the ground, and in a sense, this book reminded me of the clouds again, because I had been so busy putting my feet on the ground and being solid in life. My background is an athlete and martial arts practitioner and so on, a teacher. So this brought me back to that numinous possibilities of life, and it brought back a balance to my life. And I think that's why we wrote the book. You know, it's a collaboration, so it's not a book I have any particularly strong financial motivations to promote. I'm just genuinely thrilled with having been involved with this project. It was a joy to do it with Doug. You know, many people who collaborate on book projects end up in arbitration afterward, but we're just twice as good friends as we ever have been after doing this wonderful project together. And so, in a sense, it changed our lives doing this project and working together and making this contribution.
Well, I would say that is a very good, a good project to be able to put out. And there is a quote that you have right in the beginning of your book by Dr. Ellie Arroway, which was the role that Jodie Foster played in the film Contact. And I quote, "I had an experience. I can't prove it. I can't even explain it. But everything that I know as a human being, everything I am, tells me that it was real. I was giving something wonderful, something that changed me forever." Bridge Between Two Worlds exemplifies that. So much in life we can try to share with other people. It's our own personal experience, but it's only when we're able to dip into somebody else's experience that we perhaps can say, I understand that. I went through something myself. It's a wonderful stimulus for conversation. Many times people have had experiences that they have wanted to share, but they didn't want anybody to laugh at them or to make fun of them. And I think that this, if you have had your own particular kind of experience and you would just like to be able to read about some other people's experiences, Bridge Between Worlds, Extraordinary Experiences That Changed Lives, I think would be a great addition to your library. Dan Millman, I know that we're out of time. Your website that people can go to is peacefulwarrior.com. That's www.peacefulwarrior.com. And Dan, I wish you and Doug the best with this book, because I think it's a legacy of information that's, one, easy to understand, two, the stories are easy, quick to read. You could carry this in a briefcase, read it on your lunch hour, whatever, and they are power-packed with a message in each one of the stories that you share, and I want to thank you for being my guest today.
Well, thank you, Donna, and I wish you and your listeners a healthful and productive 2010.
Thank you. The same to you, Dan. Bridge Between Worlds, extraordinary experiences that changed lives. Go to Dan's website, peacefulwarrior.com. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. More good things to share with you, so you'll want to stay to hear all about them. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat today. Toll-free telephone number if you'd like to call in and get a free reading. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. The toll-free worldwide number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. Of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from, and then after that, just let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Again, 888-815-9756. I have a fun story about coincidental situations with a golden box. But before I do that, I want to mention that tomorrow we're going to be talking about the A to Z Guide to Healing Foods. Elsie Collins is going to be my guest. And there's always been, for the wise person, the understanding that what you eat enables you to stay healthy. Well, as we have become so populous, we obviously have had to have super-duper sized farms to feed the masses of people that are on this planet. And it's just phenomenal what we have been able to develop. We're able to provide more food than ever before. And the fact of starvation when you are in a country that has an abundance of agriculture is not so likely. But with that comes a lot of, well, what do I want to say, side effects that could be considered negative. We've gone into a lot of processed food. And lots of times we're eating foods that have absolutely no nutritional benefit. So we're going to be able to talk about foods that if you're really interested in eating for wellness and have food that tastes good, then we're going to be discussing that with Elsie tomorrow. Then on Thursday, we're going to have an open mic day. It is the day of New Year's Eve, and so I'm going to be sharing some New Year's Eve tidbits with you. New Year's Day itself, I'm not going to be on the air. I'm going to be enjoying my time, my New Year's Day, just as you will be with family and friends. So we will have a pre-recorded program that will be running on Friday. I will not be on live until the following Monday. But we've got a great lineup of guests, which I will be having up on the BBS site. You'll be finding out about who's going to be appearing on the show. During the first month of our new year, the month of January, boy, have I got a lineup, all kinds of interesting people. I'm just so fortunate because of all the various materials that cross my desk. Of course, I have to read them before I bring the people on the air with me. But it really opens up your eyes to various aspects of life and to various environments, bits of history, nutritional information, all kinds of things that I have come across my desk. Now, speaking of wellness, let me just share something with you that I was sent by a gentleman. And I don't know if you're familiar with the product Vicks Vapor Rub. Well, this is a mentholated topical cream, and it's been around, I don't even know how long it's been around. It's been around for a long, long time. And moms used to use it for kids when they'd have colds and put it on their chest, and the vapors, the mentholated vapors, really help to cause the congestion often that you get in your sinuses to be relieved, and so it was good stuff. Well, that is a very common thing that people use it for, but I was sent this information about different things that you can use it for, and I thought, wow, this, who knew? So I thought I would share it with you. Some of it might be of use to you because it's not expensive. You can buy it in the grocery store. And why not just keep it on hand? Now, if you want to use it on your feet, if you're having problems with coughing at night, and this might be something that would be, even be good with anybody that's starting to come down with a cold or has a cold, and I would never have thought of this, but they said put it on your feet, and then if you cover them, your feet with socks, it, for some reason, creates a result where it soothes the coughing. If you're having a challenge with that, doesn't cost much, why not try it? Also, it relieves sore, overworked muscles. That I know about because I've known people that have massaged that in, and it's just really very strong with a mentholated smell, so someone may not want to keep company with you until the smell wears off, but that's okay. It does help aching muscles, but I didn't know that it also affects fungus with the nails. And the what they say is if you put it on your nail, and I've known people dependent on various environments they come from, some people that have been in tropical areas, they'll pick up a fungus, or maybe they've picked it up in a shower area or someplace where they've forgotten to wear thongs or something on their feet to keep their feet from coming in contact with the flooring that they've been on. Well, they say if you put Vicks on the fungus, it actually will kill the fungus and the part will grow out and eventually you won't have fungus there. And then also, if you want to keep a cat from scratching on a surface, take a small amount of your vapor rub to the areas. Cats hate the smell and they'll stay away from it. Also, you can do this to your arms or your legs if you have a kitten who is prone to wanting to use you as a scratching post. They won't do it. So, and also, and I wish I'd known this when we had Victor as a puppy, it might have been helped because I wasn't aware of it. If you are trying to train a puppy or a kitty, if you put an open bottle of Vicks on the area that they like to mark as territory, they won't do it. They really don't like the smell. So it's a tip, just something there. And then also, if you're having headaches, for some reason, if you rub it on your temples, they say the mentholated scent will release pressure in your head and a lot of the pain will go away. So there's all kinds of little things that can be done with this. And I don't know, maybe Vicks has it on their website. But it is really an interesting product, sort of like a WD-40, but in a different form. But it's just amazing. You can use it when you're out in the woods for ticks and bugs and for getting an environment if you're wanting to sleep, so it can be used in a vaporizer. Just all kinds of things that you might want to check out. So Anyway, I just wanted to share those little tips, and I want to thank the gentleman that sent it to me because it is fascinating information. Okay, I promised you a story. Now, if you want to call in and chat with me, the number is 888-815-9756. As I said earlier, serendipitous conditions are always fascinating, and there was a particular situation that had been documented. This happened in 1921. There were two golden matchboxes that, when they were carried around by people, disappeared. Nobody knew where they were. They were exquisitely made, and they were rediscovered through some very unique circumstances. You might call them coincidences. Now, in 1901, this is the story about the matchboxes. In 1901, Prince Edward, who was the future King of England, gave Edward A. Southern, a famous actor at the time and a very close friend of the prince's, a golden matchbox. Now, Mr. Southern wore the matchbox attached to his watch chain. A short time later, while out fox hunting, Mr. Southern was tossed from his horse. The matchbox broke loose from the chain and got lost. Now, they searched and searched and searched. A reward was posted, but they never found the matchbox. So the actor commissioned a goldsmith who, in fact, the goldsmith who had originally created the matchbox that he had been given to make an identical one. Now, years later, when the actor was quite a bit older, he gave the golden matchbox to his son, whose name was Sam, who was also an actor, who was off to tour Australia. Now, while he was in Australia, Sam gave the duplicate matchbox to a Mr. Labertu in gratitude for all the assistance that Mr. Labertu had given him. So Sam returns to England, leaving the matchbox. 20 years later, Sam is out fox hunting in the same location where his father, who had passed away, his father had lost the original matchbox. Now, Sam happened to meet an elderly farmer who, on learning that Sam's last name was Southern, presented him with the first golden matchbox which he had found in the earth only that morning by one of his farmhands. Well, actually, one of his farmhands said, who was plowing the fields. There was the box. Now, Sam was just absolutely amazed. So he wrote to his brother, whose name was Edward Jr., who was also an actor, and he was in America. And in his letter, he told him the incredible story of this golden matchbox that had originally belonged to his father finally being found on the day he happened to be out fox hunting. Now, Edward was traveling on the train when he read the letter. His companion was an Australian actor, Arthur Lawrence, whom he had just met that morning. After relating the story, Edward wondered what had happened to the duplicate. Lawrence pulled the second matchbox from his pocket. It had been a gift to him from Mr. Labertu before Lawrence left Australia. Fascinating story, isn't it? Two golden matchboxes found years later. It's just amazing. I just love stories like that. They are so much fun. Donna Sebo here. Don't forget, tomorrow we've got the A to Z Guide for Healing Foods. Elsie Collins is going to be my guest. Telephone line is open if you want to call in and chat with me. 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call in to. We're going to be taking a break, and I have got a fabulous recipe that I want to share with you. Sometimes I run out of time sharing these recipes, but this one is about artichoke hearts baked with lemon and Romano cheese. Oh, I had something like this at an engagement this month. Delicious. If you like artichokes, this is really good. And it's great if you have people that are vegetarians and you want to serve something that's going to be very different, very tasty, and everybody's going to love it. So I'll be giving you that recipe after we come back from break, so have that pad of paper and pen handy. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break for just a moment, and we'll come right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Got that pad of paper and pen handy, by the way, if you want to chat with me today, 888-815-9756. Artichoke hearts baked with lemon and Romano cheese. Now, a restaurateur gave this recipe to Cal Ori, who is really a woman that knows all about nutritional benefits of olive oil. And when I came across this recipe, I thought, oh, this sounds almost identical to what was served at a dinner that I went to this month. And it was so good, and it's light but flavorful. So let me share this with you. You're going to need a teaspoon of finely grated lemon zest. Teaspoon of finely grated lemon zest. Of course, fresh is best, but use dried if you don't have fresh. You need 1.5 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice, and that's about the juice of a half of a lemon. 1.5 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice. You're going to need 3 tablespoons of your favorite olive oil, 3 tablespoons of your favorite olive oil, 3 large cloves of garlic, and you want to chop them coarsely. That's 3 cloves of garlic, coarsely chopped. You need 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh mint leaves, 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh mint leaves, a little bit of salt and pepper. You're going to need 1 can of artichoke hearts, and you want to drain them, and then you want to cut them in half. And you can get them in water or in olive oil, whatever you prefer, but they do need to be drained. You're going to need 6 sun-dried tomatoes, and you want to cut them into thin slices. 6 sun-dried tomatoes, cut them into thin slices. You're going to need 1/4 cup of grated Romano Parmesan cheese, 1/4 cup of plain breadcrumbs. So you need 1/4 cup each of your favorite Romano cheese, Parmesan cheese, and breadcrumbs. And you can make your own. If you've got day-old bread, just put that in a blender and or your Cuisinart and just let it go to town, and you'll have breadcrumbs and nothing flat. Then you're going to need some tablespoon of flax fiber and 3 tablespoons of coarsely chopped walnuts. Now, I've got a caller. Let me take the caller. When we come back, I'll tell you how to put it all together. Good stuff. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Teresa, calling from Phoenix.
Hi, Teresa. All right. All right. Now, Teresa, the first thing I'm looking at with you is what seems to be a setback is not going to be really a setback. It's important for you to pay attention to details and to realize that you're in sort of a slow period, which isn't a surprise. I mean, this time of the year, lots of things slow down because of the holidays. But you're in this period where you've sort of got a limbo effect going on, but it's going to serve you well if you'll take advantage of it and if you'll put it to use. Also, what I'm looking at is you're packing for some kind of a short trip. This could be a 2, maybe 3-day trip. It's not a long one at all. And you're going to have a chance to get away and visit some people whose company you are thoroughly, thoroughly going to enjoy. But I do think that it's going to be important for you to realize that you're going to really have to roll up your shirt sleeves and dig in and start really putting the nose to the grindstone about the middle of January, about the 15th of January. And that's going to enable you to do what you need to do for yourself. But it's going to be a pretty intense period from the 15th of January until the end of March. So you're going to find yourself really having to prioritize what it is that you want to do so that you can get things done in a timely way. And I'm looking at someone being able to assist you. Apparently you're going to want to go through some old records, and you're going to want to purge some things out of an office area, an area of an environment where there's just a whole bunch of papers. And if you have someone assisting you, my goodness, I think you'll get more done in one day dedicated to doing that than you would in 6 weeks of trying to do it on your own. So I think that you're going to team up with someone that is going to be supportive, and you'd give them the instructions of what they need to do, and you do it with them, and by golly, I think you're going to get a lot done. So take advantage of this limbo time to really look at your priorities and look at what is most significant to you. And 2010 is going to be a hard-working year, but it's going to be a good year for you. I think you're going to see some good results. What would you like to ask me today?
That was basically it. I was looking at this coming year and just wondering what insight you had for me.
Well, that was a little bit of a summation.
Thank you.
You are very welcome, Teresa. And you have a wonderful new year.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Okay, if you got all the ingredients for the artichokes baked with lemon and Romano cheese, this is how simple it is. You want to take the, you've got the list of the ingredients. You want to preheat your oven to 375 degrees. Now, in a small bowl, you want to take your lemon zest, your lemon juice, the olive oil, the garlic, the mint leaves, and the salt and pepper that you'd like to use, and just whisk them quickly to combine. And when you are using the mint leaves, just a suggestion to get more flavor out of them, just gently rub them between your fingers, the fresh mint leaves. It really does make a difference and helps to release some of those flavorful, fragrant oils too. And you want to stick, you know, you want to taste to see if it is has enough seasoning for you. If you need that a little bit extra, go ahead and do that. Now, you need a glass baking dish. I'd say a pie plant pan would be just fine, pie plate. And I'd recommend a deeper one rather than a shallow one. And you want to spray that with your non-stick cooking spray, excuse me. Or you want to just maybe slather it with a little bit of olive oil. Then you take your artichoke hearts that you have cut, put the cut side up, and you want to put them in a single layer in the baking dish. And then you want to scatter the slices of your sun-dried tomatoes evenly over the artichoke hearts. And then in another little bowl, you take your grated cheese and breadcrumbs, your flax fiber, your walnuts, and you just mix them up quickly. It'll take you all 5 seconds to do that. And you spoon that lemon oil, olive mixture evenly over the artichoke hearts, and then sprinkle the grated cheese breadcrumb mixture over that. Put it in that hot oven of 375, bake it for 20 to 25 minutes, and the topping should be a nice golden brown. That is going to be so delicious to eat. And it is healthy, it's really good, but it's just got this wonderful smell and the texture of the cheeses and the breadcrumbs and all of the lemon. It's a Mediterranean kind of a dish, and I just know that you would really, really enjoy it. So that's something that I want to share with you. Well, I know we're almost out of time here, and remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Serendipity can happen in your life, and you never know when the unique, the unexplainable is going to touch your life and change your mind. There is so much in this world we don't know anything about. And that's the wonderful part of life. You never, ever will know it all, and what a joyful position that should put you in, because it gives you the opportunity to explore. So open up your curiosity, welcome opportunity when it does come your way, because it allows you to grow as a person and to enrich your life. And by doing that, you can't help but enrich other people. It comes down to each of us recognizing our own individuality and recognizing that we can make a difference, just one moment at a time, one action at a time, one person at a time, and eventually one plus one plus one plus one plus one. It can, you know, it just adds up and changes the world. This is Donna Sebo. I'll talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.